The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
So today I'll be beginning our Dharma talk and David will be finishing it up. We'll see how seamlessly I can pass the ball to him. Once again, we're looking at nothing to do, and a reminder that when we sit and listen to a Dharma talk, just like with our chanting and our zazen, we sit upright, unmoving. We receive the words, and we allow them to penetrate if they penetrate. So letting yourself really settle into your seat. And here is, once again, Nothing to Do by Lin Ji. There's no Buddha, no Dharma, no practice, no realization. What is it you seek in others? What is it you lack? It's as though you want to put another head on top of the one you already have. At this very moment, your own wonderful function is no different from the wonderful function of the masters and the Buddhas. It's only because you lack confidence that you seek something outside of you. Make no mistake, there's no Dharma outside you to run after. There's no Dharma within to attain. Rather than seeking, it would be better to hear these words, rest, and practice having nothing to do. If something has arisen, don't try to make it continue. If something has not arisen, don't try to make it arise. This action is more valuable than 10 years pilgrimage. There is nothing you need to do. You just need to live as ordinary people. Wear your robe. Eat your food. As day follows day, be a person who has nothing to do. So for me personally, it's been wonderful to explore this text more and more deeply as the days go by. Bob's Dharma talk and my follow-up and Alan's encouragement talk last night, all of the chanting of these words, and some of them stick out and some of them have taken on new meaning for me, which is something that happens when we investigate the way through liturgy or through stories and koans about the great masters. And I wanted to say a little bit more about Lin Ji this morning because I was inspired to look into a couple of stories of his early life as a Zen student, remembering not quite accurately a story that my first teacher used to tell about Lin Ji. And when I found the actual, maybe Lin Ji didn't even exist. But anyway, we think he may have because people wrote about him. This story has taken on inside me a sort of legendary quality. And when I found out what the story was as it's been translated and handed down in the record of Lin Ji, it's a little bit different from what I remember my first teacher talking about. But I wanted to also tell a little story about Lin Ji when he was a young student, because I feel like his teachings were consistent in that what he experienced before he had awakened to the Great Way, and when he was still a disciple of his teacher and when he was a teacher himself, were all fairly consistent. There was some way that this line that I keep looking into, it's only because you lack confidence that you seek something outside of you. On the surface, Lin Ji lacked confidence when he first met his teacher, Wang Bo. Wang Bo was a great master had a number of disciples, and he was known for his powerful, unrelenting teachings. He was not, I won't even say what he was because you'll hear it in this story. When Linji first began studying with him, he was afraid to go and see Wang Bo and Doksan because he was afraid of what Wang Bo would say or do to him, because Wang Bo had this reputation for being unrelenting, of seeing right into the heart of people and seeing just what they needed and doing or saying things that would turn people upside down, as we were talking about earlier in our dialogue about home practice. So he didn't go to Doksan for years. And the head monk said to him, "Why aren't you going in to see the master? You should go in and see what he has to offer you. He's a great teacher." And Linji apparently said, "I don't want to. I'm afraid. I don't, and not only that, I don't even know what I would ask him. I just think I prefer to just keep sitting." So the head monk said to him, "Well, why don't you ask him what is the essential point of Buddhism? See what he says when you ask him that." And so Linji said, "Great, I'll do that." And he went in to Doksan and, you know, probably over these, hundreds and a thousand years, similar forms. He bowed, he took his seat, and he said, "I want to ask you, what is the true nature of Buddhism? What is the essential point of Buddhism?" And Wang Bo whacked him and said, "Get out." And that was the end of his first meeting. So, but Linji was also in his own way unrelenting. Probably that's why he studied with Wang Bo. And he went back and again made his bow, sat down and said, before he could open his mouth, Wang Bo hit him again. And then the next time Linji came in, he did the same thing all over again. He bows sitting and opened his mouth and the teacher whacked him again. But this time Linji didn't leave. He said, "Why do you keep hitting me?" And Wang Bo said, "I don't think that you can learn from me. Why don't you go and be with another teacher?" And so Linji left. And when he came back from that, that teacher said, "What'd you learn from Wang Bo?" And he just kept hitting me. So that teacher said, "Oh, you haven't recognized his kind teaching. You haven't recognized how Wang Bo has been completely there for you." And in that moment, Linji had an awakening and he was very moved emotionally. And he said, "Thank you. Thank you. Now I understand." And he ran back to Wang Bo and told him how grateful he was for his teaching. And then his training really commenced at that point. And the story that I'd heard about him from my first teacher was that one day he was sitting in the Zendo and he was sleeping. And Wang Bo came over to him and rapped the floor next to him to wake him up. And he just put his hands up and bowed and then sat down once again. And so Wang Bo did that a couple more times. Often in these stories, things happen in threes. And then Wang Bo bowed to him as he left him sleeping in the Zendo. And he went to where the head monk was sitting and he said, "What do you think you're doing?" To the head monk. "There's somebody who's really practicing Zazen in the other part of the hall." So for me, this is consistent. Both of these stories are consistent with what we hear from Linji. He was someone who, when you would ask him a question, instead of talking, sometimes he'd shout, sometimes he'd hit. Sometimes he'd talk about the Great Way in the way we've been hearing from him at this session. And his words were piercing and direct and no nonsense. Basically, the same teachings that resonate through the whole history of Zen. And we heard the similar words in Dogen this morning in his text, that the Buddha nature is already manifesting right here, right now. Why look elsewhere for it? Why do you go and seek outside of yourself? And Linji also says, and don't even seek inside of yourself. Everything you've ever needed to know is already right in front of you, but you don't see it yet, which is why you have to practice. This confidence that we have, that we develop, is a very important part of Zen practice. It's sometimes called great confidence. It's one of the three pillars of Zen, one of the three guidelines. The other two are great determination and great doubt, or great energy of doubt. And so this great confidence, sometimes it's translated as great faith, is that somehow or other, we know for ourselves when we hear the teachings that these things are true, even though we don't understand them, even though, as we said yesterday, they're full of paradoxes. There's something deep in the core of our being that knows that they're not paradoxes, that they are actually a way of finding a holistic and integrated form of all the different viewpoints that we can encounter. Dogen also talks about looking at the ocean from all these different viewpoints. To a fish, the ocean looks like a palace. To us, sometimes it looks like a circle. All of these different views, depending on how we are in the moment, are all true, and they all come together in this great view, this great confidence. But at first, it just feels like a little quiver of, I want to know more about this. I want to look into it deeper. I want to come to a sesshin. I want to learn about Zen. I want to open myself to instruction. This is the path. This is the way the path unfolds, step after step, moment after moment. And Linji knew this when he was a young student. He was afraid to go into Doksan. He didn't think he had anything to talk about. I mean, how many of us feel that on a regular basis? And we're afraid of what the teacher's going to say. How many of us feel that? And then the teacher does say something that's even worse than what we imagined, or much, much better. Nothing we could have imagined, nothing we could have expected. And Linji wanders off to another teacher, but comes back, finally understanding, or at least preliminarily understanding, what all those whacks were about, what that was intended to show him, what that was intended to open in him, that he had the confidence of persisting. And then that lovely little story about him sleeping in the Zendo, he had the confidence of persisting with what he knew was so about his body in that moment. He was tired. And Wangbo praised him to the head monk by saying, this guy really is practicing. He wasn't just sleeping and saying, whatever I do is zazen. He was sleeping from the spirit of the practice. He was sleeping within the spirit of the practice. There's a very subtle but profound difference here. We can say, we can be misled by this teaching of Linji that everything that we do is the Buddha nature. But if we don't have the view of the awakened heart, then we don't actually act from that place with consciousness. So this is about becoming awake to our Buddha activity, being awake to sleeping, getting sleepy in zazen is fully zazen. Saying only a few words to indicate the whole thing is fully the Zen teaching. Only sitting for a moment is fully the teaching. Everything is it, the teaching, the demonstration of the teaching. So this is the great confidence which we feel from our great friend and ancestor, Linji. And I will now hand this over to David to continue exploring these matters.
So this great confidence, the ceiling is over our head. The floor is beneath our feet. Dogen says that everyday mind is the entry point. We hear stories or encounter other people, and we might imagine that they have something that we don't. So easy to look at others and to, of course, we create a story. And we might think, oh, I really wish I were like him, or I really am so glad I am not like him. And sooner or later, we begin to see that there is no choice. Maybe you should be taller or shorter. Maybe you should be more even keeled, or maybe you should feel more deeply. Maybe you should be clearer. Maybe you should be more decisive. Maybe you should be more considered. But you're not. I'm not. In no world could you be different from what you are. All of the worlds the mind can make up, the worlds of should, of wishing it were otherwise. These are the brambles that cloud our way. Melissa and I have had the great good fortune to be able to spend time with our grandson, who's a little over a year and a half. And although with the grandparents' eyes, I think he is one of the brightest ever born, most creative, cutest. I also hope that every child is seen by their grandparents in this way. But the functioning, the wonderful functioning of my grandson running around, tottering around, falling down, getting up, looking up, saying, sky. Sky, blue sky, clearly a person of great insight, our grandson. But to see the wonder of a human being, the wonder of the world that he is creating, the world that is creating him, is to see the mutuality and this effortless functioning. He does not worry about tomorrow. He does not worry about falling down. Fall down, get up. Fall down, laugh and get up. Fall down, cry and get up. There is no other life. And he is also immensely immature, quite a baby. He is always wants his way, quite narcissistic, quite lost in himself. So it is not like we should become like babies or children. Except in the quality of childlikeness. But there is something about coming full circle. So important and wonderful to have a sense of ourselves, and this confidence comes from having lived in the world. This confidence that you displayed when you signed up for this retreat. This confidence you display when you come back 5 minutes before the period. Of course, we're all afraid of Paul. but more than that, you choose once more to put your rear end on your chair, in your cushion, even though you do not know what you are doing. Nor do I. But something, as Melissa said so wonderfully, something calls to us. Some deeper longing or deeper knowing, some glimpse, and so we sit down again and again. We practice being with the breath. We practice wandering away. We practice returning. And we do this again and again. And there are moments when we see the bird and the bird sees us. There are moments when we look up and the ceiling is there. And we feel so grateful. But all the time we are being supported. We are nothing but this wonderful functioning. We are nothing but this self and the world creating each other moment after moment, and we will never know how we do it. The mystery is the wonderful mystery that is so subtle and so vast, incomprehensible, ungraspable. Yet we can learn more and more to settle into the great mystery. We can learn more and more to appreciate what has been true all our life. Everything has conspired to support you, and you have conspired to support everything. We say don't go looking outside, don't go looking inside. Outside and inside are words that when we look more closely, we see two sides of one coin, arising and falling away. Not two different things, but merely the aliveness of life. So bodhisattvas settle in, realize the confidence that you already have, and let us continue. Moving into this life, this infinite life that appears in the particular. Each sound, each sensation, each thought, everyday mind, what we've been looking for. Right here. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Again, this Dharma dialogue is our Sangha practice. And so we listen to what is said. We receive and join in both in the listening to each of the teachers that appears, and offering whatever arises in our own experience.
And Bob and David and I will do our best to respond to you. So Bob, you can unmute yourself. And it looks like we have Jenny.
Thanks for the talk. The first time I came to the temple, I was coming and going, and we were doing the record of Lin Chi, and I heard some of these stories. And I heard something different today. I heard the head teacher or the head student or the head monk or whatever setting up Lin Chi, saying, like, yes. You should go in to see him. Why don't you ask him what is the essential nature of Buddhism? Why don't you do that? I just heard it differently. And then that made me kind of sad that I would have this suspicious nature to hear it that way. And yeah, go ahead.
Well, maybe it's not suspicious. Maybe you're seeing something, you know, the fabric of the Sangha. Because even though we say that Dokusan is confidential and private and, you know, don't go around talking about it, we know that everybody talks in Sangha. I mean, people are always saying, why don't you go and do what, you know, I think blah, blah, blah. So there's like a usefulness here where the head monk was trying to help Lin Chi out. He knew probably what Wang Bo's response would be to a question like that. Yeah. We're so, and believe me, we will not hit you. That is one thing, because it's 21st century America. We can't do it. You know, where it's not legal. But you know, we might do something that's just the thing that you can hear and go, oh. So if somebody else says to you, why don't you go in and talk to them? Like Corwin did the first morning, the first afternoon rather. It's, we're all helping each other in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, help him walk in and get hit or help him walk in and face his fears.
Yeah. Well, and that,
or that,
you know, we try to, sometimes we protect each other. Oh, we have to take care of, you know, David because he couldn't take it. In some ways, the head monk might have had great faith, you know, get in there and do it. And now we tell this story. How wonderful. clearly, everyone got just what they needed. Yeah. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you. Thank you. Ray.
Thank you for your wonderful talk. I had an experience this morning. I was practicing, doing nothing and just meditating and just being. And then the session ended with the four bodhisattva vows. And those, I vow to free all beings. And it was like, oh, this incredible activity. And it was this doing that essentially sort of like felt like it jarred, you know, the not doing, the taking these vows that I have sworn to do, which had, when I first heard the vows years ago, they kind of really, you know, connected with my, that I could do something. And the invitation, then I realized, no, it's this not doing is the only way that the vows, the bodhisattva vows, can be fulfilled. And it reminded me of the Heart Sutra, right? Which is no eyes, no ears, no, none of that. And the form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And this concept that, it's not in the doing. It's in that place, I guess, for me, of sort of being empty of doing. And so from that place, then the bodhisattva vows of compassion and loving, can be done without effort, you know, effortless functioning, as David reminded me. It seems that that's the way. It doesn't require great effort. Well, so, I don't know, that's what I'm sitting with.
Although he does say, do nothing.
Right, so where am I missing? What is it that I need?
You're not missing.
I don't think you're missing anything, but this doing and non-doing, we think they're separate things. And I think what you're pointing to and saying, when we come to this place, activity happens, but it's not the personal activity of the small self.
Right.
It's the activity of life, of the Dharma happening through us. And we happily, get in our car and drive to talk to a friend who's in need.
Right.
Not out of, I will save the world, but the world and the self need each other. Mm-hmm. Just walking the razor's edge here. Mm-hmm. Right? So just really clarifying the great intention to surrender and to have our life be used in this greater way.
Yeah. And Ray, I think you're pointing to the wonderful function. Mm. That in fact, even though the four vows say, do this, do that, I will, you know, I'll do all these things. What Linji is telling us is that your wonderful function is all the doing that's required in each moment. I'm reminded of the Oscar Wilde quote, be yourself, everyone else is already taken. do your wonderful function, all you need to do.
Yeah,
and this is probably just underlining the same things that all three of you have said, but this wonderful function can become blocked by an idea of wonderfully functioning, right? That's where doing, not doing, oh, I get that. I'm going to do the four bodhisattva vows. I'm going to save all beings, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, the four bodhisattva vows are koans. They're impossible. Beings are numberless. You know, it's impossible. Dharma gates are numberless. It just like on and on. Now I'm going to be like the Buddha. Well, that's cool. There's this kind of a almost a sitting back and letting the forces of doing and not doing combine into mm-hmm. being. And in being, there's a kind of doing that is not separate from being. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we act and sometimes we don't act.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Will.
Thank you. Am I audible there? Okay. Thank you for the talk.
Sorry, just hold on 1 second. We need to mute another person.
Okay. So thanks very much for the talk. One thing that strikes me is how much, at least for me, Zen is sort of, you know, you may think you're making progress in some way, but then the next question you ask is you're on square one. You might as well be your first day, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, I realized suddenly that I've been feeling a bit of, discontent or resistance. And I've been thinking, this Linji, he keeps telling me not to run outside myself. I've got to do what he wants. I've got to do what Linji says, right? And it's so easy to do that, actually, where I think, okay, Linji and Dogen, the problem is I can't quite hear what they're saying. I've got to listen hard. They've got it. Mm-hmm. And Melissa and David and Bob have it. And I just need to somehow get in line, you know? And which is, of course, completely not understanding Linji, right? Because in a weird way, for me, and I think this just has to do with my general social personality, but I tend to think, well, that if it's really me that he's talking about, then in a certain way I feel a little rebellious towards him, right? That I'm not doing him. I'm sorry. I can't do Lin Ji.
Yes.
He's dead. and it's sort of like, wow, can I take up that much space and say, like, me and not him?
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of in that, negotiating that right now.
And for various reasons, because of our history and who we are in the world, what color we are, what gender we are, you know, there's ways that, what ethnicity we are, there's ways that we can say, I can't do it because I'm not like that. And, you know, this is where Lin Ji and Oscar Wilde are really encouraging us, you know, come on, cut it out. And the thing that Lin Ji asks early on is, what is it you lack? Mm-hmm. My first teacher used to ask me that all the time. Mm-hmm. I came up with all these long lists and no. And he'd ring the bell and I thought, oh, that's where I really lack. You know, I don't even know how to answer this question. And then there was a moment when, oh, wait a minute. It all dropped to it. There's nothing lacking, nothing lacking. Mm-hmm. And yet the echoes of that persist all these years later because our training is so profound in being a person in this culture that, you know, I have doubt all the time.
Right. And it's not that Lin Ji, what I lack is what Lin Ji has, right? No. That's the feeling I get sometimes, right?
Yeah, and that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So wonderful.
It's not that at all, right? It's not listening closer to him in a certain way.
And I think that's the challenge, that we can reify these Zen teachings and we can use them to support the ego that thinks it doesn't have, right? Mm-hmm. And the ego will take everything over like that. So wonderful to notice. And I love your rebelliousness. I think there has to be a quality of that in our Zazen. Like, fuck it all.
Yeah.
Right? You know, that I will manifest myself, right or wrong, whatever I should be. And so there is that energy of claiming ourself. Yeah.
And in that way, you are like Lin Ji. You know, think of him sleeping in the Zendo, you know, rap. Oh, yeah. Wow. Go back to sleep. Right. He didn't care at that point. If he'd been rebellious earlier, it might have been an empty rebellion. This feels like a rebellion that's coming from a real entering into the matter at hand. Yeah.
Will, I'd also like to say you're pointing to something I think is so profound, which is this question of how do we help each other without turning it into some kind of looking outside of ourselves. You said, you know, Melissa and David have it, right? But how do we work with each other? How do we share our wisdom, all of us, with each other without then putting some people on pedestals, without, you know, so the kindest thing that Lin Ji would do if he were here is to say to you, Will, you're absolutely right. I don't have it. You know, how do we keep doing that for each other?
Yes. And I think there's another little thing here that you just demonstrated, because when I heard Will say, Melissa and David and Bob have it, I didn't hear the Melissa. You just said, well, you know, Melissa and David have it. You didn't hear the Bob.
I guess the commonality is.
David has it. Now, I keep looking at the screen and there's a string of letters, but I'm pretty sure this is Pierce. Is this Pierce P. Butler? Yes, it is. Great.
Sorry.
There you go. I'm looking at
I'll change it later. Thank you.
Now, though.
Thank you, Melissa and David, for the talk, and Bob for quoting Oscar Wilde. and thank you all for choosing this reading. I really like to work with koans with you, but this is just a wonderful choice, and also it's a favorite reading. And when I hear it, I can remember how disconcerted I was when I read it first. When I read that first line, there's no Buddha, no Dharma, no practice, no realization. But now I've graduated to the point where I think, with a kind of a chuckle, those monks listening to Linji must really have been beside themselves. You know, he's telling them there's no Buddha, no Dharma, and they're asking themselves, why did I bother leaving home for this, you know? Yeah. And then, having said that, he gives these very explicit directions when he says, if something has arisen, do not try to make it continue. If something has not arisen, do not try to make it arise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I glom onto those, you know, because I'm saying to myself, well, here is something that, I can practice.
Yeah.
But I found myself doing that in this retreat, zazen after zazen, until I realized that in point of fact, what he says at the beginning applies equally well to these directions. You know, they are kind of, they direct you to cease and desist. You know, stop doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Do nothing. But when I realized that, I felt that I was ceasing and desisting in a different way, and everything kind of fell to the ground. And that was a great relief. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't feel like I made contact with the ground. I just sort of kept on going. But somehow, to see that, my tendency to glom onto things is not necessary, and that I can do nothing without having a program of doing nothing.
Oh, that's beautifully said. I love that. And you know, I just want to add that the glomming on is also it, right? That, yeah. And you recognize that, I'm sure.
And appreciating too, these moments where there's this feeling of relief or release. You know, I so appreciate every one of us that's here and how hard we're trying, you know, and every part of us, the old little boy who wants to be okay and, you know, all of this. And then there are these moments where from the trying, from doing the wrong thing, that there are these moments where it drops away of itself. We drop away. And I think that sense of relief, oh, it wasn't about that to begin with. And we've been saying, oh, it's so difficult, it's so hard, but it's so easy. Right? Oh, just do nothing. Why didn't someone tell me that?
Thank you so much, Pierce.
Yeah.
Let's go to Brad. I don't think we've heard from you yet.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I heard it right that confidence could be substituted for faith in the three pillars. Like great confidence.
Confidence could be substituted.
Oh, yes.
Did I hear that right?
It's the original word in Chinese means confidence and usually translated as faith.
Yeah. It seems like confidence for me comes from within. And faith, I guess you could say that, but faith is faith in something outside of myself in a way. Like I'm sure, I don't want to use the word confidence for faith, but I'm confident that faith is well placed, that it has a basis in reality. But my confidence is more of a personal certainty or certitude. And this is not the place to be confident, I feel, in Dokusan or in Zazen. Yet at the same time, I could use a little confidence to be more encouraged. So,
one of the roots of confidence, the Latin roots are confidelis, with fidelity, with authenticity. So I think of this more than having faith or confidence in myself, I can do it, but the with authenticity, showing up as ourself, taking that risk. Mm-hmm. Me, and it's not a faith in something else or believing, but just this one breath, just showing up in this moment.
Yeah. You know, and another way I think of confidence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And fidelity is also faithfulness, I guess, loyalty.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Bob, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say that yeah, confidence or faith could be faith in something outside, but I think one of the things that this intensive practice keeps giving me is this confidence and faith in the unfolding of each moment, that even when I'm caught in my dramas, even when I'm just in whatever hell realm I might be in, that there's an abiding faith that, yeah, and then the next moment will arrive. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what that will be. And there's something about that faith that is sustaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also something we can practice. So what if I can trust my breath? What if I don't have to worry about my in-breath and I can just breathe out? What if for this 1 minute I don't have to check and see how good a Zen student I am? We can sort of play. What if I don't work hard this period of Zazen? A kind of willingness to see what happens, willingness to trust what is arising. Of course, we have no choice in some way, but that shift in attitude can make a big difference. Yeah.
So, Bill, I know you had your hand up. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay, go for it.
Sorry, I thought we were running out of time. Well, thank you, all three of you, for, you know, these wonderful talks on Linji. And what came up for me during this talk this morning was this feeling of sadness. Mm. And just sort of a pure, unadulterated, authentic sadness. And, of course, my instinct was to look around and say, did someone see that? I sure hope not. So this feeling that maybe I shouldn't have this feeling.
Yeah.
And so I had to sort of work with that for a while as well. So I just wanted to express that maybe I'm becoming perhaps more accepting of these feelings that I think I shouldn't have.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yeah. And just moment by moment, noticing the arising of them and your capacity to turn towards them and then see how they come and go. That's part of the practice. So, yeah, it sounds. Does that sound like what happened?
I identify myself as a sad person. Mm-hmm. As if that were really a wrong, or that's a bad thing.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yes.
Well, and we can notice all of us have made a map of what is okay to feel and be an experience, and what is not okay. And part of what our sitting does, I think, is it wears the barriers down a little bit. So the parts of ourself, because we all have all of the full range of human emotion. Whatever we feel is what human beings feel. And so just appreciating the surprising nature, and the point, you don't have to know where it comes from or what it means. It's just that, oh, this is how human beings feel sometimes, including the feeling this way and being slightly embarrassed about feeling this way. This is just how human beings feel sometimes, right? And this is faith. This is the confidence. Well, maybe I can just let it be. Maybe enough. Yeah. So we're going to stop the Dharma dialogue now. Thank you for everyone who participated and raised your hand. We'll sit just for another breath or two, and then we'll receive our homework. So we're moving into our afternoon practice, those of us on the East Coast, some of us moving into evening practice. And we're deep into Sesshin now, and this energy that I am so grateful for each one of you being here, each one of you being foolish enough to spend 3 days together. And so encourage you to continue in your foolishness of being a beginner in your life. You too are just a year and a half old. You too are born new every moment. So giving yourself this incredible gift this time. So taking care of yourself, nourishing yourself, noticing what arises moment after moment, there is nothing you need to do. And we'll gather again at 2:25 by 2:25 to continue our Sesshin. Thank you.